Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
Ah! This is The Herd, wherever you may be and however you may be listening, live in Los Angeles. iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, and FS1. Joy Taylor is joining me
on a
Tuesday. Good morning, after watching that incredible spectacle last night with Patrick Mahomes. It was an incredible game. NFL ratings up on all the windows. Get to that in about 5 minutes. Let's start with Patrick Mahomes. He's the talk of the day, so I was sitting watching him last night, and he's pretty amazing. He is a jump-off-the-television-screen talent. And as much as I like all the other young quarterbacks in the league, Sam Darnold, you know I like him, they don't have his arm talent. He's the most talented young quarterback last 2 years to come in this league. Last 3 years, you'd include Jared Goff. Jared Goff is not as talented. Does not have the arm of Patrick Mahomes. I'm showing our FS1 audience that's an absolutely ridiculous throw. Might as well just have fun and show you the left-hander he made as Von Miller was chasing him around the field. Let's turn the sound up to one of the plays of the year in the NFL.
Third and five. Kelsey's a man on the drag. Here comes Von Miller. Oh, how did he pull that off? He got it to Hill, and they've got a first down.
Joe, are you kidding me?
Wow.
This guy is incredible. You know, there's many years ago they talked about Montana magic in Kansas City. Look at this guy. Von Miller on his heels. He throws it left-handed.
He puts it in his left hand and shot puts it to Tyreek Hill for a third down conversion.
Yeah. If you had a television quarterback rating, he's number one right now. And I'm not even sure, frankly, it's not even close. Here's the thing. He's really talented. Brady's got rings, but we don't worship Brady. We think of him as kind of a grinder, a workaholic, really responsible and coachable. There is a downside. There is a burden to great wealth and great talent. It is not a coincidence that Whitney Houston's great voice and Mike Tyson's great power and Tiger Woods' great talent all came crashing down. Because the burden, when you're as talented as Patrick Mahomes, it leads you to dark places. You don't have to work as hard. Nobody will ever call you a system quarterback. They'll worship you. You'll make throws you shouldn't make. It is not a coincidence that our greatest musicians, our rock stars, our Mike Tysons, our Tiger Woods, our Whitney Houstons crash. That kind of power, that kind of talent comes with a burden. People compare him to Brett Favre. I find him intellectually more sponge-like, more coachable, a little less ego. I like Patrick Mahomes going forward over Brett Favre, although he's clearly, at this point, not Brett Favre. But what's interesting about the NFL, when you look at the all-time interception leaders, you would think the guys that throw a lot of interceptions, you know, they couldn't get the ball there. Yeah, the ball dies. A defensive back comes over. No, it's the guys with the strongest arms. It's Joe Namath and Brett Favre and John Elway and Big Ben and Dan Marino. And it's the guys, Vinny Testaverde, that could throw a strawberry through a battleship. It's guys that threw heaters. Because when you have the ability to throw the ball anywhere, you'll want to throw the ball anywhere. Is that when you have an unlimited voice, an unlimited power, an unlimited talent, you think of it as fewer obstacles. No, it's just a different set of obstacles. The best thing Mahomes has going for him is he got to sit for a year. He's got great weapons and a remarkably innovative head coach. Darnold walked into the league, very few weapons, and a defensive coach. Baker walks into the league, the pressure of being a number one pick, injected quickly into playing, and a completely dysfunctional organization top down. Mahomes, with all his gifts, got the perfect coach, got to sit for a year behind a smart veteran, and oh yeah, Travis Kelce, Sammy Watkins, Kareem Hunt, Tyreek Hill. It is the perfect quarterback storm. And the downside to that is he's never going to have a bad year. He's not going to have those growing pains of Baker Mayfield. He's not going to have that embarrassing year of Jared Goff. He's not going to kick it around for the next year like Sam Darnold. He's never going to get shut out like Josh Allen. He's never going to sit on the bench like Lamar Jackson. And you think that's all good? Oh, no. That comes with its own set of pressure. Patrick Mahomes has never had a bad game. Never got humiliated. Never got shut out. Never got mocked and ridiculed. You look around this league, most of the guys who are superstars in the NFL at quarterback were overlooked, buried, crushed, humiliated. And it builds that thing on your shoulder called a chip. I think Patrick Mahomes is amazing, but that kind of amazing talent in any walk of life, a big brain, a great arm, the perfect voice, great power, comes with its own set of issues. I think the kid will handle it. I think he's got the perfect coach. I think he's got the perfect city. I think he's a really, really great kid whose dad played some pro sports. But don't think it'll be all easy, because he is right now in America the most fascinating football player to watch, and he's still a kid. Can't wait to watch it unfold. Let me shift to this. NFL ratings, CBS up, Fox up, Thursday Night Football up. I don't know the number last night, but I would imagine it's up. In fact, 9.1 last night, up. In fact, also important, 13% growth among people making over $150,000, big income advertisers like that. Why would this be? Offense, offense, offense. If Patrick Mahomes does not play last night, that game is won by Denver, and this morning it does not lead my show. We're talking about defense, sacks, 13-10. The NFL does not need to accommodate Clay Matthews. Clay Matthews and pass rushers need to change. I am so over hearing everybody whine about these poor defensive players who can't get a break from officials. I want to show you two pieces of video. Twitter, the angry bird, was outraged when Baker Mayfield flag was hit by a Raider. Barely hit. You can barely notice it. How in the world is that a flag? Put dresses on these guys. This is outrageous. No, it's not. The Raider defensive player led with the crown of his helmet. If the crown of his helmet is 3 to 4 inches higher, guess who's starting next week for Cleveland? Tyrod Taylor. They're back to being uninteresting. That's a flag. Don't lead with the crown of your helmet. By the way, Khalil Mack's figured it out. Von Miller has figured it out. Clay Matthews is still complaining. Here's some audio from last night. The best pass rusher in the league, or second, Von Miller. Roll the tape.
There's been a lot of conversation about roughing the pass in the National Football League. But just watch Von Miller. He's got an opportunity to hit Mahomes and then land on him. He says, you know what? I'm not going to get a penalty here. And just full speed, driving him into the ground. But he decides, you know what? I can't do that because that's a point of emphasis, and I don't want to get flagged and hurt my team. Nice move there by Von Miller. Appreciate it, bro.
Thank you, Patrick Mahomes. Thank you. By the way, do you know the backup for the Kansas City Chiefs? I had to look it up. It's Chad Henne. If Von Miller puts his weight on Patrick Mahomes and Patrick Mahomes leaves the game and they put in Chad Henne for the rest of the year, when Chiefs games are on Sunday, instead I'll go to Jiffy Lube and watch them work on other people's cars. That'll be more entertaining. 31 of 32 NFL teams have starting quarterbacks that are starting quarterbacks. One dozen, the San Francisco 49ers. And by the way, be totally honest, unless you live in the Bay Area, when you see a 49ers game now from this point forward, it's just frankly not as compelling. Clay Matthews is 32 years old. He comes from a legendary smart football family. He's been in the NFL for a decade. Evolve. Vaughn's evolving. Khalil Mack's evolving. Clay Matthews, evolve. I'm over having everybody whine about the hits. In every walk of life, academics, landscapers, pilots, me, we all have to evolve. New information, let's change it. But Baker Mayfield, crown of that helmet, 4 inches up, he gets whacked in the face, and I got Tyrod Taylor for the next 2 weeks. Those are the ratings. Patrick Mahomes whacked last night by Von Miller. I got Chad Henne. That's not a sound you want to hear in the NFL or me make. I'm over it. Belly aching. Ratings up everywhere. There's a reason. It's not the tackling thing. It's the quarterback thing.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Some things you could say, but they're hard to do, like having patience, working out, eating right, right? Like those are hard to do. Everybody says they're going to eat right. It's hard to eat right. I had just a big plate of nachos last night. I didn't want to do that, but it was right in front of me, and the cheese was melting, and my son had it, and I had to have some. And then working out. I feel like working out every day. Some days I get up, I don't want to work out. Patience is hard. Got to have patience. Got to have patience. Pittsburgh, three head coaches since 1969. Cleveland Browns, three head coaches in 4 years. They got the way to do it in their own division, but it's hard to be patient. And with Le'Veon Bell, right now, oh, Pittsburgh's in last place. I'm hearing a lot of this. Pittsburgh, you got to get going. You got to get going, Pittsburgh, on Le'Veon Bell. You're in last place. Pittsburgh's really, really good at the patience thing. A lot of you wanted Chuck Knoll fired at the end. You wanted Bill Cowher at the end. You got tired of him. Mike Tomlin, everybody wants out the door right now. Pittsburgh is very, very good at not only saying we can be patient, but being patient. And everybody's banging on the Steelers. But let me just say this. The Rams, and this is what I hear people saying. Well, Rams took care of Todd Gurley. And Arizona took care of David Johnson. And the Atlanta Falcons took care of Devontae Freeman. Well, yeah, but those guys didn't have two failed drug tests and get busted in a car for drug use. Think about it this way. Every player has a Carfax report. This is the simplest way to think about it. Every player has a Carfax report. Le'Veon Bell's has two accidents and a transmission's been swapped out. And that affects what people are going to pay for the car. And now you got James Conner. You're leasing James Conner and he gets you to and from work. You may not have heated seats, but you're not running into telephone poles either. The Steelers do not trust Le'Veon Bell. And the Steelers have a right not to trust Le'Veon Bell. And the Steelers have a history of being really, really patient. In 2015 and 2016, both years, Le'Veon Bell started the year suspended. This is not a Todd Gurley situation. Todd Gurley has a completely trustable personality with nothing on his Carfax report. And Devontae Freeman. I mean, Le'Veon Bell's a really talented kid, but they're not in the wrong here. What they're basically saying is, we'll give you a deal, but we have a history here of being patient. We'll wait it out. Now, there's a report this morning that Le'Veon Bell's going to report, you know, the bye week, week 7, week 8. All right. But if you want to play with the Pittsburgh Steelers and you're going to try to force their hand, they win always. They do. Cleveland, three coaches, 4 years. Pittsburgh, three since 1969. They don't listen to the noise. They don't feel the pressure. They're the opposite of a low self-esteem sports program. They're the opposite of the Clippers or the Mets or the Jets. Like the Steelers, they got all sorts of trophies and rings. They're in no hot rush. They're in no hurry. So, and the division is not running away from the Steelers. Baltimore's good. They're not perfect. Cincinnati's interesting, but they're Cincinnati. And Cleveland, they're probably a year away, Baker another 10, 15 starts from really clicking. They already gave away a game this weekend against Oakland. So you just let's add context to Le'Veon Bell and people freaking out. If you think the Steelers are going to fold on this, you picked the wrong organization, man. Because they say they're patient, and they got 50 years of showing you they're patient. And that Carfax report for Le'Veon Bell's got all sorts of dings on it, and accidents on it, and swap transmissions on it. And that goes a long way into you deciding what you're going to pay for a car.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
So one of the big stories over the weekend was Earl Thomas, great player, flipped off the Seattle Seahawks sideline. And, you know, I said this a couple years ago with Pete Carroll. He's got the slogans, kumbaya, a lot of politics. I think Pete's a good guy. But some of it, it's with Pete, he comes in, the program explodes, and then it sort of unravels after 8 or 9 years. And I'm seeing at USC and Seattle Seahawks kind of the same thing. He's still a good coach. He's very good defensive coach. And so when Earl Thomas gets hurt, goes off the field, I hear a lot of people supporting him, including Pete Carroll on Seattle Radio. Radio said, hey, don't go crazy. He's a kid. It happens. Here it is.
People that are criticizing whatever happened don't understand. This was an earth-shattering moment for a kid. You know, he's trying to play this game he loves, and all of a sudden this happens again. He knew exactly what had happened to him. He went right to what it's going to take to get back, and all the, you know, he had it all just totally figured out, and it's as emotional as you can get. But he was very chilled about it, you know, on the field. He was an unbelievable stud about handling it, and give him a little slack. You know, this is this very, very difficult moment that most people would never understand what that was all about.
All right, so let me just add this. He was on his second Seattle contract, which he agreed to. It's not like he's been jobbed. He's in a state with no state income tax, and he's lucky because he plays safety, which has been marginalized and reduced in importance. So he's not going to get the payday he wants. But I heard something on Monday Night Football last night. I mean, forget the fact that 9 years he's played in a state with no income tax, and he's made $55 million. He's got a lot of money. But last night I'm watching Monday Night Football, and one of the announcers says, well, he's only the sixth highest paid safety, yet he appears to be the best safety. Okay, my brain hurts. Let's slow down on this. Do you know who the highest paid left tackle in football is? That's a really important position. It's Nate Solder of the Giants. He is the fourth best tackle in his own division. He's not Tyron Smith, not Jason Peters. He's not Trent Williams of the Redskins. Nate Solder is the highest paid left tackle. He's the fourth best left tackle in his division. Well, Colin, that's just one position. Do you know the highest paid wide receiver in the NFL is Sammy Watkins? Sammy Watkins appears to be the third or fourth favorite target of Patrick Mahomes. The second and third highest paid quarterbacks in the NFL are Alex Smith and Jimmy Garoppolo. And the highest paid tight end is Jimmy Graham, who would not start for New England or Kansas City. In fact, Gronk is the eighth highest paid tight end. And I think like Travis Kelce, who I think is as good as Gronk or better, is now ninth. Earl Thomas, you went to the University of Texas. They have a business school. You should have taken more business classes. In what profession, except for like commissioned, like car salesman, are you ever the highest paid person at the same time you're the best at what you do? I mean, I work in radio. The way it works is you generally get paid for what you did. If you're a legend, Paul Harvey was making more at 80 than he was at 60, and he was way better at 50. Go around the NFL right now. This is how it works. Texas econ classes. Please take them, people. If you go to the school there, you will be paid. And then the next week, somebody else will sign a contract. Every week, every month, every year, players in your position are signing contracts. And so being the highest paid guy is all about timing. Aaron Rodgers until recently was like 11th highest paid quarterback. Brady now is 15th. Nate Solder, highest paid tackle. Sammy Watkins, highest paid wide receiver. Gronk is the sixth highest paid tight end. Travis Kelce's eighth. And those are the two guys in the league nobody can guard. Jimmy Graham's got one touchdown. With Aaron Rodgers, he's number one. I mean, at some point, Earl Thomas. Okay, You're at a position that's getting marginalized. You're on your second contract in Seattle, which you negotiated. And frankly, you're the sixth highest paid. Considering you're closer to the end of your contract than the beginning, that's about what you should be paid. And if you didn't get hurt, you would have signed a new contract and you would have been the highest paid safety. Nobody's hosing you here. It's basic economics.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app. Herd Hierarchy.
Time is now. Let's go.
The top 10 NFL teams according to Colin. Number 10.
My new favorite NFL team. I think they're going to stay in the Herd Hierarchy for the rest of the year. The Chicago Bears. Number 1 in sacks. Number 2 in rush defense. Number 2 in takeaways. Khalil Mack, defensive stars. Listen, I have reservations about Mitch Trubisky. I do. I think he's got a really low ceiling. But I think there's two teams in the NFL, when I watch their offense, the Rams and the Bears with Matt Nagy, it's like they're using different playbooks. So many looks, so multiple, so much motion. It's got a college feel to it. I love what I see from the Chicago Bears. Their best start since 2013, Bears at 10.
Number 9.
Carolina at 9. Here comes Norv Turner. And what do you know? Cam Newton has career high in completion percentage, passer rating, and touchdown to interception ratio. Here's the other thing. They're different than everybody else in this league. Everybody else is throwing. They have the number one rush offense because they have the best rushing quarterback. And they're frankly just playing to their strengths. And my knock on Cam has always been, he's not a precision thrower in a precision league. But Norv Turner is the secret sauce. He is closer now to 65-66%, which is way above Cam's average. A couple years ago, he was at 54%. I've got Carolina. I still like their front seven defensively a lot. I've got him at number 9.
Number 8.
Philadelphia Eagles. Listen, they lost Frank Reich. He's now the coach of the Indianapolis Colts. He was running their offense last year. Frank's really good. And it's noticeable. And they've had a rough September. And they're 2-2. But they're still number 1 in the NFL in rush defense. And if you can stop people running, you make them one-dimensional, ultimately you win games and get the ball back. Carson Wentz has been inactive. Now he's back. Let's get him home for a couple of games. Let's get Carson Wentz in that running game and those receivers back for a couple games. This is still as good as any roster in the NFL. Eagles at 8.
Number 7.
Minnesota Vikings. Not every loss is doom and gloom. I thought they looked great against the LA Rams. I really did. I really like what I saw. By the way, here's their issue. They're last in rushing. So they put everything, a lot of third downs where they have to have Kirk Cousins make a play. Mostly Kirk Cousins has delivered career high in passing yards a game. But the problem is they're getting to third down a lot. They did it against the Rams. They got to third down 16 times. Why? Because they can't run. And so they're trying to run. And the weakness of this team is the offensive line. But it is still a roster outside of the offensive line full of B minus, B and B plus guys. I've got the Vikings at 7.
Number 6.
The Saints. I was really surprised. Generally, the last 9 times the Saints had gone on the road, it was the second game of a road trip. They were 1-8. And they went up to New York, and that game was never in doubt. And again, the Saints do a couple of things well that people don't notice. First of all, it's a very good offensive line. And you think about their receivers, you think about Peyton, you think about Breeze. That's a very good offensive line. They can control the clock. The second thing is they are third in rush defense, so they're forcing you to throw. And Alvin Kamara leads the NFL in scrimmage yards a game this season, 152.80. He's not a fluke. I have the Saints at 6.
Number 5.
I didn't have him in. I'll just put New England in there because they're going to win their division. Because the Jets and the Bills are starting rookie quarterbacks, and Miami is Miami. 10 straight wins against the Dolphins at home. Now, they've still got big issues. They don't get to the quarterback. They're 29th in sacks. Now, I think they can get away with that in a lot of games, especially in their division. Because those rookie quarterbacks, not a lot of weapons for Josh Allen in Buffalo, and not a lot of weapons for Sam Darnold in New York. I think it will come back to haunt them when they play a Kansas City, when they play a Baltimore later in the year. They just don't get to the quarterback. But Edelman comes back. He's their number 1. Gronk's their number 2. Their third best target is James White, the running back. So that allows Chris Hogan to be a 4th option. Philip Dorsett to be a 5th option. Cordarrelle Patterson to be a 6th option. Who knows where Josh Gordon is? If Josh Gordon now, with Edelman coming back, can just remain active, they will have largely solved their biggest weakness outside of their pass rush, which is weapons.
Number four.
Four best teams. These, to me, are the Super Bowl frontrunners. Number four, Jacksonville. Great defense. Number one defense. Number one scoring defense. Number one pass defense. It's a combination of great corners, tremendous pass rush. Their best start in 14 years. I got to say this, though. Blake Bortles may have some limitations, but he looks more comfortable on third down than he has ever looked in his career. And it should be noted, he lost Marquise Lee, Allen Hurns a possession receiver, Leonard Fournette's been hurt. There's every reason for Blake Bortles to not look good. But on those third downs, we know the defense is great. He's looked in really comfortable. So this is for the first time why I'm buying into him. He doesn't have that panic look, that rush look. I have the Jags at four.
Number three.
All right, Kansas City's amazing, but they're last in total defense. And again, last night was a fireworks show. You have got to clean up that pass defense. Case Keenum had time. Case Keenum delivered a lot of big passes last night. They're going to win games because this offense has a great coach, a great quarterback, a great back, a great tight end, a couple of nice deep threats. But in the end, I think their defense is an albatross and will come back to haunt them if they don't get it cleaned up.
Number two.
My Super Bowl dark horse before the year, I think the Baltimore Ravens, watch out. Number two in total defense, and third down defense is great. They're getting people off the field. And by the way, the new NFL, Joe Flacco, pushed by the draft of Lamar Jackson. Joe Flacco's having a great year. I said this about Baltimore before the season. They drafted two tight ends, and they acquired three new receivers. So Flacco's got five new parts. Do not judge them in the first two or three weeks. This is a team by November when those young tight ends who can both play and these receivers, John Brown, Crabtree, they can play. This team is guaranteed to get better as the season goes on. They haven't allowed a second half touchdown this season. They've outscored opponents 49-9 in the second half. And they're good on special teams. Baltimore at two.
Number one.
I kind of think by a long shot, the Rams. I think they have as good a defensive coordinator as anybody has. Their defensive line is terrific. They're banged up at corner, but they're still good. Offensive line, terrific. Running back, quarterback, head coach, receiver, concepts. The only knock I have on the Rams, their pass rush is very hit and miss. They're pretty ordinary at linebacker. And again, if you get into a game against Aaron Rodgers later this year and you're not getting pressure on him, then you're going to put incredible pressure on Marcus Peters at corner, Sam Shields, and Aqib Talib. But for now, punter, kicker, coach, coordinator, lines, I think by a touchdown, the Rams are the best team in the National Football League.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Oh, it's one of my favorite 10 minutes of the week. Trent Dilfer, I'm not going to waste any time. Played a decade and a half. Super Bowl champ, Pro Bowler, drafted by the Bucs, 6 overall. Trent Dilfer via the Coward Global Satellite Network. Okay, the offenses, Lord, they're Mitch Trubisky, 6 touchdown passes. They're exploding. Give me the big picture why they're exploding.
All right, so I think you got to go back. Let's use an arbitrary number of, say, 10 years. Before 10 years ago, the NFL offensively was a league of can't. What do I mean by that? Well, you couldn't throw the ball more than you run it. You couldn't displace your tight end. You couldn't take running backs and line up outside receivers. You couldn't play at a high tempo because you'd be exposing your defense. You couldn't run your quarterback. You definitely couldn't run the zone read. You couldn't have RPOs. People didn't even know, they didn't know what to call them at that time, run pass options. In the last 10 years or so, it's really become a league of can. Now we can do anything. So you have to ask yourself why, after years and years of years, the NFL is saying we can't do this. Why are they saying they can now? And it's very simple. Forever, team innovation worked its way down from the NFL to college to high school. Well, about 10 years ago, maybe even longer, it started working its way up. And I said this about 7-8 years ago on ESPN. I said, watch out. In the next 10 years, you might not recognize the NFL game. Because what I knew was going on were college coaches were going to high school programs and going, whoa, we're going to recruit a kid, but we love what you're doing offensively. Why don't you come to our school and teach us this? And the colleges started doing it. And everybody loves how explosive college football is. But the NFL said, no, no, we can't do that. That could never work in the NFL. Well, then all of a sudden, NFL programs start bringing college coaches in saying, how do you guys do that? Teach us how to do that. And it became a league of can. I think that's a huge reason why you're seeing the scheme changes. Number two, this is the first generation of quarterback that has grown up with all access to all the quarterback information and reps you could ever want. Never before have you been able to go to Amazon and see how Tom Brady trains, or go to whatever and see Jared Goff and the Rams, or go pull up everything Elite 11 training, or go watch Quincy Avery in Atlanta train Deshaun Watson along with 10 other high school and college kids, or Jordan Palmer in California have camps where NFL players come in, high school, college players are there as well. Think about the 7-on-7. Think about the tens of thousands of more reps that, let's say, Jared Goff has in his bank than a quarterback that was drafted in the 1990s, early 2000s, who never had 7-on-7, who didn't get to read defenses, who didn't understand the difference between a short side throw and a boundary throw, who didn't have to ID a Mike linebacker, see secondary rotation, yada, 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 basically be a quarterback. So these quarterbacks, these offenses have expanded rapidly. Then I do think the rules play a big part of it. I think the video games play a big part of it. I was a coach's son. I knew as much football as any college quarterback when I went to college. And I'll tell you right now, every kid I talked to in high school knows more football than I knew at that time because of video games and exposure. So it's just the perfect storm.
By the way, people comparing Brett Favre and Patrick Mahomes, you know both. Take me back to Favre's rookie year, second year. Did he look like this?
Well, I got my brains beat in by him for six straight years. I think I was 0-10 against him in Lambeau. I watched him win those three MVPs. To me, he's the greatest talent and playmaker that ever played quarterback. And I watched this Patrick Mahomes kid, and I think he's better than Brett was at this stage. And I bet you if you got Brett on an interview, he would say the same thing. Brett had the huge arm like Mahomes. Brett was fiercely competitive. Brett could turn nothing into something. But this kid plays with rhythm and timing, discipline with his eyes. When he does do his athletic stuff, his playing beyond the X's and O's, he's not careless with the ball.
Yeah.
If you notice these plays where he's running around and you're showing him right now and creating, the location of the ball is safe. It's accurate and safe. He doesn't come close to fumbling in the pocket. He has incredible instinct. I think he's a generational talent and a kid that's going to be as good as we've ever seen.
I don't want to put you on the spot, but everybody in the NFL either says they've got their quarterback and they believe it, and then I think there's about five teams that say it publicly. There's a kid at Oregon, Justin Herbert, who's a potentially very special kid. And there's a couple of teams out there. Listen, if you're Eli Manning and you're the Giants and you finish 6-10 and I got some pieces around, I got Odell, I got Saquon Barkley, you know, a lot of the bad teams, Trent, are going to have top 10 picks, and they don't need a quarterback. The Jets don't need one. The Bills don't need one. Cleveland doesn't need one. What team in the NFL, Giants, Dallas, Jags, Miami, do you think is saying they love their guy, but if they had a chance to get the kid from Oregon, they would?
Well, I'll even talk to a bigger scope. I think we've all dated somebody before we found our bride that we dated for a while. We didn't want to be alone, so we didn't, but we knew we weren't really going to marry. And I think that's going on in five or six places in the NFL, that they are in a dating relationship with their quarterback. And it's a good dating relationship. They've met each other's parents. They're talking about moving in. Like, they're close. You would almost call it a marriage, but they're still dating. And I think that organization saying is, I got to hold on to this until I find the one I want to marry. And I think most of them want to marry the kid out of Oregon, Justin Herbert, or Drew Locke out of Missouri, or wait on Dwayne Haskins at Ohio State, or Tua at Alabama, or Will Grier at West Virginia. They have their eyes on those players saying, man, I really want to marry that type of talent, but I may not ever get to meet him / her. So I got to hold on to the one I have and make the most out of this relationship while I can, because I'm not sure if I'm going to be introduced to the my future bride down the road. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I think that's going on in five or six places.
Yeah, I do think it's a Miami and a Jacksonville. Finally, 3 minutes left. Dallas says, Zeke's our guy. We're led by Zeke. And I say to myself, you're not getting to Super Bowls led by running games. I don't buy that you can do, and I like running backs, but Goff has to be good for Gurley to explode. What do you make of Dallas saying Zeke's leading our franchise?
Well, I think he's leading them this year. They have to find an alpha perimeter player. They have to find a big-time playmaker, a guy that you lean on and all those, you know, every TV analyst will show you the all 22. Here's a one-on-one on third and seven. And Julio Jones and A.J. Green and, you know, Antonio Brown, they make the play. The Cowboys have a lot of those looks, too, and they're not able to get that alpha person open and making plays, explosive plays. I think they're one piece away, as I've said before we can truly judge Dak and this offense's ability to go the distance. Now, I think there's another element we touched on earlier. I do think that Scott Linehan, who I have a lot of respect for, he's been a great coordinator in this league for a long time, but I do think he needs to continue to grow and innovate and add more Saturday concept to this offense while they're looking for that alpha perimeter player. I'm with you. I don't think it could be a Zeke Elliott-centric offense and get you the Super Bowl. But I think if it's Zeke Elliott and they find another alpha, a big-time playmaker, whether that's in free agency or in the draft, then Dak can be good enough to take them the distance.
All right, we got to run. Trent Dilfer, you got anything on YouTube I should look at? Anything you're doing right now business-wise here, quick?
I'm boring as heck. Just check out Soul and Science on NFL Network's pregame show on Thursdays. John Brankenside doing our thing there.
Soul and Science, Trent Dilfer. Good talking to you, bud.
Thanks, buddy. Always fun.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like. After almost 3 hours, Colin apparently hasn't gotten to the point yet. Quit holding out on us, Cowherd. It's the best for last.
So we're doing our quarterly NFL awards. We're having awards today. These are our quarterly NFL awards, and Joy Taylor is going to offer up some nominees. Let's go.
All right. The first award in the Herd NFL quarterly awards, the best team with a losing record. And the nominees are the 1-2-1 Pittsburgh Steelers, the 1-3 Atlanta Falcons, or the 1-2-1 Minnesota Vikings.
Well, the Steelers defense, I don't think is that fixable. Atlanta's got too many injuries that they can't overcome. I would say the Minnesota Vikings are the best team with a losing record. By the way, they beat the Rams last year. They matched up with the Rams very well on Thursday night. Minnesota's a real football team. Upset alert. They go to Philadelphia with extra days to prepare. And Kirk Cousins, they may not run the football. They're still passing it well. Minnesota's the best team right now with a losing record.
Okay. The next category is worst team with a winning record. The nominees are the 3-1 Chicago Bears, the 3-1 Miami Dolphins, or the 3-1 Tennessee Titans.
I believe in the Chicago Bears. I love their coach, Matt Nagy, and defensively up front, it's nothing but dudes. And the Tennessee Titans are limited, but I think they've got a certain culture I believe in. The Miami Dolphins are the worst team with a winning record. And I think that New England game, there are losses, and then there are losses. And that was embarrassing. You could have gone 3.5 up on New England, and to not even compete was so Miami Dolphins. That's the worst team in the league with a winning record.
Tried to tell you. All right, next we have frequent Colin Cowherd targets who has impressed you the most. The nominees are Baker Mayfield, Cam Newton, Joe Flacco, or John Gruden.
This is tough because Cam has become a precision thrower. Baker is about what I thought he would be. John Gruden, this past week I finally bought him, but my winner is Joe Flacco. Drafted two rookie tight ends, three new wide receivers, and I got to be honest with you, I think they're the first, second, or third best team in the league. Flacco, I thought, on the road, they played some tough teams. Flacco's kind of blown me away.
All right. The best player without a supporting cast. The nominees are Andrew Luck, Russell Wilson, or Aaron Rodgers.
Okay. Andrew Luck has no running game. They don't even try to run the football. What did he have, 62 attempts this year? They had, I think they rushed the ball 17 times. Three of them were Andrew Luck. Andrew Luck is working not a limited running game. They have no running game and don't even try to hide it. And they still only have one weapon on the perimeter. He's the best player without a supporting cast.
Could be a destination for Le'Veon Bell. All right, the next category, a storyline you're most tired of. The nominees are the Brady-Belichick feud, the Le'Veon Bell holdout, or the controversy over the roughing the passer rules.
Since Brady and Belichick was the first drama in years, so I was kind of fascinated by it. Le'Veon Bell does wear me out, but I think he would make the Jets and the Colts really interesting. So I think the idea of where he would land is kind of fascinating. I'm over roughing the passer. Von Miller last night, Khalil Mack the weeks before, have figured it out. Go for the ball or grab the player and set him down. Clay Matthews, Von Miller's figured it out. Khalil Mack's figured it out. By the way, 31 of 32 NFL teams have their starting quarterback. The ratings are up. The one that doesn't, San Francisco, I'm not going to watch the rest of the year. I mean, I'm certainly not going to go seek them out. I may watch them because they're on. The league's doing this because they want healthy quarterbacks. It's smart.
All right. And finally, in the Herd NFL Quarterly Awards, the worst decision category.
By the way, John, where's this music from? It sounds very...
It's like canned award show music.
It's very awardy.
Well, that's kind of the idea.
These are awards.
Okay.
So the nominees are, for worst decision category, the Raiders trading away Khalil Mack, the Bills starting Nathan Peterman week one, or Jimmy Garoppolo dating an adult film star.
Well, dating an adult film star is a brief lapse in judgment, and starting Nathan Peterman was a longer but mostly brief error in judgment. Khalil Mack, you're going to pay a price for that for the next several years. John Gruden was quoted saying this week, he had another strip fumble sack? He was quoted as saying that to Mike Silver. I think for a lot of reasons. I got to tell you, too, my biggest knock on the Raiders right now is they don't have a pass rush. And they had it, and they let it go. You know, it's weird. I almost wonder, Gruden has been so busy building up this offense. You know, he went and got, you know, Jordy Nelson, and, you know, he went and got Martavis Bryant, and he's trying to get his offensive system in. You almost wonder, did Gruden watch a ton of Khalil Mack? Because, again, it's not like the Raiders were on Monday Night Football when Gruden was doing it.
Yeah, but it's not like Khalil Mack is, like, sneaky good. It's like an under-the-radar player. It's pretty well known that Khalil Mack is a big deal. So even if you didn't watch tape, I'm pretty sure they have like a little highlight reel.
Do you know how good you have to
YouTube
be?
It.
Do you know how good you have to be a defensive player and make me want to turn your game on? I mean, honestly, J.J. Watt had a little bit of that. Deion Sanders had that. But in my life, there have been about three guys that I'm like, oh, I'm going to watch that defensive player. Ray Lewis had a little bit of that. I mean, Khalil Mack gets me to a television set. That he is absolutely incredible. Those have been our Herd Quarterly Awards. That music, I thought, was very fitting, very dramatic.
It was very regal. I mean, these are prestigious awards.
These are prestigious awards. These are very prestigious.